Coming back home and taking a look at the JSE's performance, managing a positive finish with a gain of just over 1%. As you can see there, it's been green across the board today. Resources 10 component, just over 0.5% to the good. Financial 15 managing a 1.14% climb, and the industrial 25, 1.6% in the green. Joining me in studio now for a closer look at the equity space, Graham Frank from PSG Wealth Santam. Thanks so much, Graham, for joining us this evening. So the month of May, we had the market down 5%. And every single market commentator was calling today to be a very negative day, yet the JSE strong. Are you surprised by today's performance?
Yeah, I am somewhat. As you say, on Friday, all world markets were down quite strongly. And going into today, everyone said that we would be down probably 1%. And we opened up 0.5% and only went stronger throughout the day. But as we were chatting earlier, even on Friday, I think we sort of opened flattish, went down 1%, ended the day up 1%. So quite directionless and volatile at the moment.
What is interesting and certainly stands out is the fact that it's SA Inc. stocks that are gaining momentum here following a week or two of negative returns. It's, of course, on the back of the Rand showing strength. But it's interesting because it comes despite very disappointing economic data today in the form of our latest PMI print.
Yeah. As you said in your introduction, it was the PMI print. It was Imperial's very poor results. It was Delta Property. I mean, Imperial came out and said things like, you know, a very poor economy, very high unemployment, and they specifically said the South African part of their business is doing extremely poorly. So that share price was down sort of 5-odd% when I last looked. And we've also had two very high profile resignations in terms of Eskom and SAA. The Rand went stronger and all the SA Inc. stocks were up quite strongly today. And as you again said in your introduction, the industrial side of the market was up almost 2% today.
So despite what the markets are doing, given the context that we're looking at, are you buying into SA Inc. right now? Are you seeing opportunity?
So yeah, we are. I mean, it's quite a polarized view, the SA Inc. bulls versus the bears. The PSG asset management view is that valuations are very low and that there's a lot priced in at this point to the downside. So if we get any uplift in terms of GDP growth, in terms of earnings growth, we should see quite a material re-rating of the shares. But I think that's still some way off the improvement in underlying GDP and earnings that we're going to see coming from the corporates.
In fact, we're anticipating a GDP print tomorrow for the first quarter, and by all forecasts, that picture is certainly not looking very encouraging.
Yeah, and as you say, all the leading indicators like the Purchasing Managers Index today would indicate that it's not going to be great.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's drill a little bit into some of the detail on Imperial, because like you say, it's highlighted persistently poor economic conditions and ongoing economic uncertainty. And it's within that context that we had the South African division deliver an unsatisfactory performance. Is there anything beyond that that stood out for you today?
Yeah, so roughly the new Imperial business, remember they split out Imperial and then the Motus dealership. So just looking at Imperial now, roughly one third of their business is in South Africa and two thirds of the business comes from Europe and outside South Africa. So the outside South Africa business is doing okay, whereas the one third in South Africa, A, is doing poorly, and B, that's where the billion-odd write-off is coming in. Mm-hmm. So, again, it's one of those businesses that are really, really struggling in the local environment. And its sister company, Motus, is predominantly South Africa and would benefit from a stronger rand, obviously bringing cars into the country and selling to selling vehicles in South Africa.
Yeah, if the demand, you know, actually speaks to its favor. In the meantime, I want to take a look at Sasol because it's been, you know, moving around on the back of that oil price. We saw oil prices continuing to fall, seemingly now settling at about 61.82. Mm-hmm. Sasol, in that context, given the fact that, yes, we've seen delays in its Lake Charles project at higher cost as well, but today saying that the second of seven production units at the plant has come online, does that provide any comfort at all?
Yeah, it does. I still think they're a long way in terms of getting investors' confidence back, though, into Lake Charles. Remember, Lake Charles started at roughly $8 billion right at the outset. It's now up to north of $12 billion. And there's delays in terms of the project. So just at the time when we were expecting Lake Charles to come on stream and start providing some really good cash flows is when they came out with that very disappointing announcement. So I think it is going to take some time for the market to get back the trust of Sasol, and in particular Sasol management.
Absolutely. Well, Sasol ending the session pretty flat today. Aspen, in the meantime, moving ahead. It's the top performer on the top 40 index today, increasing 4.75%. Of course, it's announced that it's finally concluded the sale of its infant formula business. Your reaction to that? I mean, it was pretty much expected and only a matter of time before this was all closed out.
Yeah, actually quite a similar story to Sasol, if you think about it. You know, massive disappointment by the market, massive disappointment in terms of management. The share price slid quite materially over the last few months, and now they've concluded the infant milk formula and quite a big sigh of relief from the market. So not only today, you know, Aspen has bounced off its lows that we saw a few weeks ago.
Absolutely. Amidst it all, what's your stock pick at the moment?
So we really like Mondi. Just 6 months ago, the share price was 420 Rand. It's now down to almost exactly 300 Rand, which is where it was 2 years ago. Very well managed global business on a P of roughly 10 times. And, you know, the whole world's going anti-plastic, and they're quite strong in the sort of cardboard and non-plastic packaging materials.
So well positioned for the future. Let's leave it there. Thanks so much, Graham, for having joined us in studio this evening. Of course, Graham Frank is with PSG Wealth Sandton. Delta Property Fund has been paralyzed for more than a year by the government's reluctance to commit to a new leasing framework first proposed in 2016, which contained longer term leases at relatively lower rentals. The company's reported annual numbers today showing a near 10% decline in net property income, further translating to a 24% fall in distributable earnings to 73.8 cents. CEO Sandile Nomvete joins me in studio now to go through some of the detail. Thanks so much, Sandile, for your time this evening. When it comes to Delta, the standout has always been its sovereign underpin, and where in contrast to perceptions, it was once your stability, this past year has been your toughest operating period in history. So what's changed?
I think historically, maybe I think you correctly pointed out that, you know, a property company has to function with leases. You know, if the leases are delayed, that obviously has a knock-on impact in terms of cost of debt, in terms of capex that we can spend. And, you know, whilst there were negotiations about the leasing policy, you know, obviously we didn't have leases to confirm vis-a-vis in terms of what that will be from a sector perspective. I'm glad to say that post-year end, that has now been done. Mm-hmm. And we've actually signed 88,000 square meters of GLA, which we'll only see the benefits for FY 2020. So I think, you know, but obviously the financial period that we're looking at is FY 2019, which was extremely, extremely difficult for us. You know, average lease expiry profile came down, that obviously had an impact on our debt expiry, which obviously had an impact on the cost of debt. And obviously, which meant we had less capital to spend on capex, so even on the quality of our assets. So we now basically, post year end, will be looking to basically commit. When you sign these leases with your tenants, you obviously have certain obligations that you commit to the tenant. And in the next 6 months or so, we'll be spending a lot of capex on this building.
Okay, this, as you see, the pace of, you know, signing of long-term leases really growing and heightening over the near future. Does the conclusion of South Africa's national elections bring with it now more decisiveness as far as government is concerned and where and how much it's willing to spend?
Well, I think it's a function of the health of the treasury in terms of finances. Clearly, the health of the sovereign balance sheet is under pressure. I think, you know, you can see what is, you know, the state of the affairs with a few of the SOEs, whether it's been Eskom or SAA. Mm-hmm. So I think we are cognizant of that. How that's translated to us is that we as landlord has been put under huge pressure, obviously, to come down on rent revision, and hence we have forecasted a rent revision basically that we are signing through now. And the impact of that basically translates to our guidance of a decline of 8 to 10% going forward for FY 2020 as those revisions come through. Those revisions obviously come through as savings for our tenant, as you mentioned in your opening. And I think it's only fair that, you know, when your tenant is struggling to basically with his own finances, that you become to the party. The downside of that obviously is that if we are not getting the long-term leases, we can only spend a limited amount of CapEx on those buildings.
Yeah. I asked the question because, broadly speaking, the hope is that we are looking at a more austere government. What are the implications for you as far as securing state leases is concerned? Because while it may see government sign more cost-effective and longer-term lease agreements, it could also speak to less rental space being needed in the long term.
Well, I think, you know, we are of the view that, you know, we need to have a functioning government. And, you know, historically, you know, government needs to be in accessible buildings. And those nodes happen to be the central business district, which is where the bulk of our properties are based. You know, our key nodes at this stage is Pretoria, where we've got about 34% of our exposure of in terms of portfolio basis. 29% is Durban, within the Durban CBD, and obviously we've got exposure in the rest of the country as well. So for us, whilst there is a cabinet reshuffle and, you know, a smaller cabinet, the wisdom tells us that the number of employees in those ministries won't necessarily reduce drastically. There is talk, obviously, of offering voluntary retrenchments to government employees, but obviously that's a government employee. It's natural attrition. We need to make sure that our buildings are functional. They qualify for health and safety occupancy certificates. And we need to make sure that our tenant ultimately is happy, because obviously whilst we are seen as a market leader, you know, there is limited competition, particularly in the nodes that we play in.
While that's the plan, Sandile, you are looking to reduce your concentration risk in South Africa by exploring investment opportunities in other countries.
Absolutely.
In Southern Africa.
Absolutely.
What exactly is attracting your attention at this stage?
Well, I think, you know, as any investment strategy will tell you, you know, you can't have all your eggs in one basket. So we have taken a view. At this stage, we are basically researching neighboring countries. Particularly of interest to us is Botswana. Of particular interest is Zambia. Particularly from a diversification perspective, also not too far away where we can't reach those areas within an hour and a half from a management perspective. But it's also not having our eggs in one basket. I think it's we're trying to be prudent. But at this stage, there's nothing that concrete that we can basically saying that, you know, we are basically putting capital in those countries. You know, the narrative in our results is that the bulk of our focus at this stage is definitely inwardly focused. You know, we need to bed down the leases. We need to spend capex on our properties. We need to, you know, commit and finalize the debt refinancing. We've just recently refinanced 1.9 billion rand worth of funding. And the strategy is that we want to bring in more funders to the table to obviously allow us to spend more money on the capex.
Having said all of that, and I've got to ask you, with the benefit of hindsight, should you have diversified, geographically speaking, sooner?
Look, I think hindsight is always the exact science. But, you know, I think we could have done that. I think at this stage we needed to secure our position, particularly in the SA at this stage. And I think we're comfortable with that. And I don't think that we've missed the opportunity in those other jurisdictions.
Let's leave it there, Sandile. Always a pleasure. Thanks so much for having joined us in studio this evening. Of course, that's the CEO of Delta Property Fund, Sandile Nombete. That's some of the news emerging on the company news scene locally. On the global front, news around the trade war is still in the spotlight, and this time around, China's released a paper stating its stance. We get into the nitty-gritty of that after the break, so keep watching. China has struck a defiant stance in response to Trump's growing pressure on trade, blaming the U.S. for a breakdown in negotiations and saying it must withdraw its latest round of tariffs before a deal can be reached. Let's cross over to Bronwyn now for more insight.
Thanks, Alicia. Well, as the new trading week gets underway, investors are positioning themselves for a drawn-out trade war and a likely global recession. And so we've seen a surge in safe havens. This follows commentary from a senior Chinese official and trade negotiator yesterday who commented that the U.S. cannot use pressure to force a trade deal on China. And then we also had the Chinese defense minister say that if the U.S. wants to talk, China would keep the door open. But if America wants a fight, Beijing would fight till the end. To discuss this further, let's cross now to Deutsche Welle's Daniel Koop. Daniel, thank you so much for your time today. I've mentioned some of the commentary from over the weekend, and along with that was the unveiling of a new Chinese government policy paper on the trade war, which states that the U.S. must remove all existing tariffs for any deal. It certainly seems that it's unlikely that this will happen, right?
Yeah, very unlikely that this scenario is going to happen. I was talking to quite a few traders here today on the trading floor at the Frankfurt Stock Exchange where we are, and they told me, yes, there was some hope some weeks ago that possibly a solution in this ongoing trade conflict could be found. But now with this latest rhetoric, those very strong words again from the U.S. President, even though those talks are still ongoing, this scenario does not seem to be very likely at all. And very interesting, you mentioned those safe havens that investors are currently looking for. The Swiss franc is always a very good indication when you talk about these safe havens. It went up to a record two-year result to a day, and this is always a very good indication when traders are worried about a certain circumstance, about a current political situation. So that's why we're seeing this movement there happening today also in the currency market.
So then let's take that a little bit further. We're saying that that rising prospect of a drawn-out trade war has fanned recession worries. And like we said, it's largely why we've seen equities and commodities come under pressure today, and those safe havens really surge ahead.
Yeah, exactly. The equity markets here around Europe are very much under pressure. This was happening already after the markets in Asia were in the red this morning. When we take a look at the blue chip index, DAX here in Frankfurt, it has been mostly, pretty much all day in the red zone. It has recovered a little bit during the afternoon. A similar picture also when you look over to the CAC 40 in Paris or the FTSE 100 in London. So there is lots of uncertainty. Investors clearly want answers. They are tired of this trade conflict. And even though we were getting news also about the development of the Chinese economy that is still at a rather good level, many investors feel that at the end, these trade talks, this trade war, I should rather say, between the U.S. and China, that at the end, this could really result in a recession, and that the economy worldwide at the end might be suffering and slowing down.
I'm sure we'll be keeping a close eye on those developments and chatting to the correspondents at Deutsche Welle for more on that. But for today, let's leave it there. Daniel Koop is from Deutsche Welle, and that's a look at your global news headlines. Alicia, it's back to you.
Thanks, Bronwyn. And that's where I leave things with you for now. Stay tuned for Smart Money. That's coming up after the break, and I'll see you back at 7 o'clock. Or what's your stock pick at the moment?
So we read it like Mondi. Just 6 months ago, the share price was 420 Rand. It's now down to almost exactly 300 Rand, which is where it was 2 years ago. very well managed global business on a PE of roughly 10 times. And, you know, the whole world's going anti-plastic, and they're quite strong in the sort of cardboard and non-plastic packaging materials.
So well positioned for the future. Let's leave it there. Thanks so much, Graham, for having joined us in studio this evening. Of course, Graham Frank is with PSG Wealth Santander.